Today I spoke with Coach Lauren Coleman. She played basketball and graduated from Florida State University. Immediately after graduating, she became a girls' high school varsity head coach. She's been at a few different schools throughout her journey, but is currently the head coach at Beckman High School in Irvine, California. We talk about many aspects of coaching high school, but more specifically, what it's like coaching in Irvine, California. And we even touch on the Black Lives Matter movement. Let's roll it back and see how this conversation went.
Tell us how you got into coaching.
So I started actually back in high school. It was about my sophomore year of high school. And my younger cousin, he had his little rec league tryouts at like the local league we had. And I went to be supportive, and they actually ended up needing extra coaches. So I asked my mom if I could do it. And she was like, sure, you know, it's your time. So it was my first coaching gig. I was coaching second and third grade boys. So it was pretty cool. It was the first time I had ever coached by myself. Like, we had practices. There was like a draft that we had to, you know, pick our players and stuff. So it was pretty cool. I did it for 2 years. The first year, it was a little rough. I actually ended up with a lot of just like the leftover kids because I was the last coach kind of in. So I didn't really know what I was doing per se with the draft and all that. But the second year we came out and we were pretty good. We ended up getting second in that league, and I was actually able to coach the All-Star game at the end. So that was pretty cool. And actually a lot of those boys now are in college playing sports, basketball, football, baseball. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool for sure.
You know, I also coached second graders, and I think it might be one of the most frustrating coaching positions I've ever had.
Definitely.
But I did co-ed, so I feel like boys are, it's still frustrating, but second grade boys are just not the same as second grade girls.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's frustrating and fulfilling at the same time, because once they start figuring it out, like I had them, we were running a full-on 2-3 defense, we were running offense, all that stuff. So to watch them kind of pick it up at the end, again, as second and third grade boys was pretty cool. So,
all right, so you went to Florida State and you tore your Achilles, which is just a crazy injury, one that's really hard to come back from, which led you to redshirt your sophomore year. So tell me what that redshirt year was like, and what was the mentality coming back?
Yeah, so that year actually was just it was a rough year all around for our program. It was actually like the first time in like 10 years or something we didn't make it to the NCAA tournament. So it was a rough year for everybody, you know, not just me with injuries and stuff. But tearing my Achilles in particular, number one, I did it with zero contact. All we were doing was conditioning. I went to plant to turn, and as soon as I went to push off, it was like, they usually say it feels like somebody shoots you in the back of the leg or like you got kicked. It's pretty accurate.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that's how I did it. And Achilles is no joke. You know, before that, I had already had 3 knee surgeries. My freshman year, I had a knee surgery in college. So to tear my Achilles my sophomore year, it was a little more devastating, to say the least. And I had never had an injury like that before. You know, all my injuries were knees. You know, I've had issues with my knees since like 7th grade, you know. So the Achilles was just very different. And I wouldn't wish that one on anybody. You know, in my opinion, I think it's worse than the ACL recovery process because, number one, I couldn't wear 2 shoes for like 6 months or something like that. And, you know, I love shoes. Like, I'm a total sneakerhead. So, like, I couldn't even think about buying shoes. So that part right there was, that was tough for me. But, you know, the recovery process and the mental part of it, it doesn't really change. You know, some injuries, like I said, are harder than others. But at the end of the day, you know, for me, at least, it's, you know, basketball is all I have, you know, still to this day, really. It's the only thing that's truly for me is mine, you know. So at the end, it's like, how bad do you want it? You know, how bad do you want to keep playing? How bad do you want to stay in school? Because for me, if I were to quit, you know, it wasn't just going home and living with mom and dad and, you know, they're going to take care of me. It was, I hope I could stay with my parents, and I hope that I could figure out how to feed myself and get a job and stuff like that. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to be all, you know, gravy if I were to go home. You know, my best opportunity for me to succeed was to stay in college. And again, that relies on me being able to rehab and get back to basketball. And so that's the mental aspect for me, is how bad do you want it? You know, and it's not just getting back to basketball, but your rehab is the most important part. If you don't do your rehab correctly, you getting back on the floor means nothing, because all you're really doing is just waiting for another injury. So I think kids, especially these days, you know, you get your injury and they just want to get back on the floor. But it's like, you have to take your time and make sure your injuries heal. And again, that whole process of really just, again, being patient, that 6 months with no two shoes was rough. But, you know, you take your time, you put in the work, it is worth it. Because, again, I was still able to come back and, you know, in my eyes, have a successful career and finish out my time there. So,
yeah, you know, obviously it sounds like you were pretty mentally tough going through that injury and that recovery, which, like you said, a lot of people, they're not patient. As soon as they get injured, they want to try to come back sooner than they should. Or they might even, they come back and they're timid. They question if their Achilles or their knee can even get the job done, so to speak. So I want to know, since you are a former player who's gone through a pretty traumatic injury and bounced back, does that affect the expectations that you have on your players when you coach them? And if so, how does it?
Yeah, definitely. It, like I said, you know, going through those injuries, pretty much if I could do it, you could do it. You know, I'm no different than anybody else out here, you know, just trying to navigate my way through life. So if I could do it, I could push through 3 knee surgeries, a torn Achilles, and, you know, all those little nagging injuries that you get in between. Like, what's your excuse? You know, what makes you any different? If you want to play basketball and you want all these things, an injury should not stop you. You know, and you mentioned, like, when you come back, a lot of kids are timid, you know, you, especially these ACLs nowadays, good golly, you know, we get bombarded with ACLs nowadays. And then, you know, a lot of the times nowadays, these kids are getting 2 and 3 ACL tears. And a lot of that could just be prevented with not being scared. You know, injuries are going to happen regardless. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been walking down the street and just twisted my ankle, just rolled it. You know, you can't control it. It's just, sometimes it's out of your control. So again, if you want to play, don't stop yourself. There's plenty of other things out here that's going to try and stop you. Don't add to it by stopping yourself and putting that mentality or those thoughts in your head that what happens if I tear it again, or what happens if I get hurt again. You know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But either way, you got to go for it. You know, holding yourself back isn't going to get you what you want either way. So go for it. Like I said, if you get hurt and you still want to play, you rehab, you get back out here, you do it again, you know. But that's my kind of perspective on it. And also, too, I'm very big on, you know, I have no problem getting out and still playing with my players. So, you know, I'm X years removed from college after 3 knee surgeries, a torn Achilles, bad back, and I can still get out here and beat up on you guys. Again, you have no excuse. It's just, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want to play basketball? So.
That's right. No, I agree. I definitely agree. And I, you know, there's a saying, it says about, you know, anxiety and worrying about things. If you worry about something before it even happens and then it happens, it's like you just put yourself through that situation twice. And then if you worry about something and it doesn't happen, well, now you just put yourself through that situation for no reason. So it's like, why even worry about it? Okay, so
thing for sure.
Immediately after graduating from Florida State, you become the head coach at Costa Mesa High School. And that's not typical. It's not typical for someone to graduate college and then they are a head coach, no, regardless of what level. So tell me how that happened.
Yeah, so my brother, he actually worked at Costa Mesa at the time. He was a campus supervisor and he actually coached football as well. And, you know, my last year was coming to a close and I was already decided I was moving back to California. It was just more so, what am I going to do once I get there? And so he texted me one day and said that the, you know, head coach position for the girls opened up and asked if he wanted to put my name in the hat. And, you know, I was sure, why not? and they called me, you know, they set up an interview. And before I knew it, my mom had bought me a plane ticket to fly back out here. I had the interview with them. You know, I did that whole process and flew back to Florida. You know, and then within like the week or so, they called me and, you know, they offered me the job. I couldn't tell you how. You know, sometimes I think everything kind of just falls in place for a reason, whether we know that reason or not. I think that was just kind of one of those times. Again, I'm sure it helped that, you know, they loved my brother at the time and he was a big influence on that campus. So yeah, definitely me being his little sister, I'm sure helped that out. But, you know, that's just kind of how it done. Sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know, and it worked out.
That's awesome though. You know, to no matter how it happens, it happened. And you, sure, your brother had a great relationship with everyone on campus, and I'm sure they had some sort of, oh cool, yeah, his little sister, of course, that's a no-brainer. But at the same time, like, you had to go in there and do good on your interview. They don't just hand that to you. Like, you had to have at least done a good job, because if no matter how, like, whatever status your brother has at the high school, if you go in there and you just bomb it, they're not going to give it to you, you know? So like, you got to give yourself some credit there. Like, yeah, it's who you know, but you did something. So, but yeah, I saw that and I was like, dang, right after Florida State, she's just a head coach. That's pretty cool. So, but you're at Costa Mesa. I want to know, and you know, I coached at Costa Mesa high school. Mm-hmm. So like, this is a fun conversation for me. What challenges did you have when you were there, or maybe mistakes that you made in your first year as head coach, and how did you learn from them?
See, that's a loaded question right there, and I think you know that's a loaded question, but I think for me, going into that situation, like you said, fresh out of college, I was definitely a bit naive and just how high school sports works, you know, especially because I went to high school in Georgia. So just athletics as a whole is run completely differently. So coming out here and my first coaching job, it's a head coaching job. That transition alone and just how things were ran was completely different. so that was a struggle, but I would say definitely just do research on the job and the school and the program and, you know, their history, administration, all that stuff. Like I said, I was naive. I was just happy that somebody wanted me to be the coach. And I just jumped into it, you know, no regrets. That's for sure. I had some amazing girls there. In my opinion, you know, if we would have been able to keep all the extra drama out of it, we could have been a really, really good team, you know. We had like some like ridiculous talents, like the twins, Taylor and Felicia. They're both playing, or I guess doing track in college now. You know, Christina Matafa, she was ridiculous. Like all these, you know, I think in my mind, collegiate level athletes. But a lot of drama just riddled our team. And it just, you can't have a positive season with extra drama that's not needed. So that was tough for me. And again, that was just me being naive, just jumping into something and not knowing what all comes with it and all the things you have to deal with and all the things that fall back on you as a coach, regardless of whether it's your fault or not, or whether you knew about it or not, it's on you and all eyes are on you. So I think, again, just do your research and know what you're jumping into before you do it. And, I'd say lastly too, put the kids first, you know. I think your first year, you question yourself a lot. I know I did. What am I doing the right thing? Am I teaching the right stuff? You know, am I saying it the right way? But for me, it just really boiled down to just go with your gut, you know. I'm a kid from Long Beach, California, that made it to Florida State. So, you know, I did something right. And so I just went with what I grew up with, you know, what I learned. And honestly, being honest with your kids helps a lot too. And, you know, being honest and realistic about where we are as a team and our level, skill level and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, put the kids first. All that drama and stuff like that, it shouldn't even matter. It's about the kids, and that's it. Nothing else should matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I see that you've gone from coaching at the high school level, and you dabbled a little bit into college, and now you're back at the high school level. So I want to know, what made you decide to get back into coaching at the high school level after going up?
It's actually an interesting story. So I got that college job. It's actually a funny story. I played in the Nike 3-on-3 tournament out in LA that summer, mm-hmm. right before. Yeah. And I met this lady. She was like a A&R type rep from, she did a lot of work with the Sparks. So I met her and I saw her there at that 3-on-3 tournament. And, you know, she just asked me how I was doing and all that stuff. And I was in a pretty big, like, transition period in my life. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. I wasn't really happy with where I was job-wise, like my 9-to-5 and coaching. Both were just kind of up in array, if you will. So, you know, I told her about it, and she was like, you know, email me, give me your information, and let me see if I can reach out and, you know, find something for you. And she did. She gave me the number to this guy, Chris Shade, and he was actually the AD over at Cal Miramar University. And I went, had an interview. It wasn't even an interview. We just met and talked, really. He was really cool, like down to earth. Didn't really ask me a whole lot of basketball questions per se. You know, he just asked, oh, you went to Florida State, you played, oh, you have coached, that's good type stuff. But I guess it was more so just off of personality, really, because, again, it wasn't formal by any means. And yeah, by the end of that, I think we talked for like an hour, hour and a half. He was like, cool, so you want to coach here? I was like, sure. And he was like, all right, cool. Practice starts in like 3 weeks. We only got 4 girls so far. So if you know anybody who wants to play in college, get them my number ASAP. We have to recruit. We need girls. Like I said, we only have 4 that were registered in school, ready to go. And yeah. So that's how that started, and I think we only ended up with 7 girls registered to play in school. Half the girls hadn't picked up a ball in over a year. You know, some of them had kids. You know, we were running a slight little babysitting service to the side. it was crazy. I honestly had never experienced anything like that. Again, coming from Florida State, you get the best of the best. I'm not even going to try and deny that. So to go to a program where they were just starting up as a first year program, we're scrounging to get players. I literally mean, we were running a daycare off to the side with, you know, kids, having to try and get girls into practice because they're working. I don't think we had one day of practice where we got all 7 girls there together, not one day. So yeah, it was rough. It was like, we were the female Bad News Bears. Like, it was tough. Traveling too, we were all squished up, all 7 girls, 2 coaches, however many babies were coming with us that road trip in a van, driving. Like, yeah, people don't understand. That was a crazy year. Like, again, I had never experienced anything like that. But it was fun at the end of the day. We didn't win one game, not one. We went completely over. But it was fun. I could definitely say it was fun. I got the memories from it. The girls were still, you know, they were amazing. They had positive attitudes when they were there. but it was tough. It was tough. Like, that was the first time I ever drove a 15-passenger van, you know, up north, mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere. It was crazy. And so, you know, after the year finished up, again, there was a lot of side drama behind the scenes too. So I knew it was my time to go. I appreciated the year, but I had to get out of there. And, you know, that's when the Beckman position opened up. And so it kind of led me to where I am now. But it was definitely an adventurous year with that program for sure.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like my first year at OCC, minus maybe the daycare and a few other little details, but for the most part, I mean, as far as, you know, having four players and trying to get a team together, and sometimes not everyone is there. So I can relate to that, but that sounds even more interesting. Quite the learning experience.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
All right, so you're at Beckman High School now. Tell me, what's the ultimate goal for you?
Well, last year was my first year there, or here, I guess. The ultimate goal last year was make it through. To be completely honest, when I was told about the position and going to apply for it, I was extremely hesitant. Extremely, just because of everything I went through with Costa Mesa, coming off that crazy year with the college. I don't know. I was very cautious of what I was going to step into next. But the positive light was, again, a lot of my girls that I coach for AU, they went to Beckman. So I kind of knew the background of some of the players, obviously, you know, where they come from. And I love my girls. So that definitely helped with my decision to apply for the job. Once I got it, again, like I said, the main goal was to make it through. Let's see what we got here. Let's push through. Let's take it as far as we can. And we really did that. You know, I asked the girls what they had, the goals, especially the seniors, you know, coming in. I think I was the third coach in maybe 4 years that they've had. So it was rough for the seniors, and I definitely wanted to give them a positive note to leave on. So when I asked them their goals, I'd say 90% was make it to CIF. You know, out here is everybody's trying to get to CIF. They hadn't done it in about 3 years or so. So that was our goal, was to figure out a way to make it to CIF. And again, we had a lot of talent. It was the learning curve that was a struggle for us. The basketball IQ and understanding why you do certain things and what you're looking for in certain plays and how to do stuff like that. But once we figured out that we were a defensive team, yeah, we were on a roll from there. Defense was definitely our bread and butter last year. I'd say probably one of the best, if not the best, defensive teams I've coached. I had a girl last year, I've never seen anybody be able to literally play defense at a consistent level like her, like the whole game. Is applying pressure, cutting people off, moving, getting in the passing lane. Like, it was amazing to me. So to see those girls have a rough, you know, 3 years before that and then give them that light their senior year, it was pretty cool. We were able to get an at-large bid, and we made it to CIF in the end. We upset some people along the way. We upset two of the toughest teams in our league, that being University and Woodbridge. We upset them each once. So that was amazing. Like, we shook our whole league up with that, you know, allowed other teams to, you know, get their chance. So, you know, again, it was cool to see the girls, you know, see if you just give a little effort, you fight for something, you can impact a lot. And again, it wasn't just us. We opened the doors for other teams in our league just because we knocked off those top two contenders, you know. Right. And so doing that, like I said, we got our at-large bid. We made it to the first round of CIF. We played Anaheim the first game. First half was good. We were in it. Second half, we couldn't hold on, unfortunately. But it was a good experience, I think, for everybody all around. The seniors got to walk off with, like I said, that bright light. They made it to CIF. They hit their goal, you know, no matter how they did it, how we got there, whether it was an at-large bid, whether we made it outright, you know, you made it. And that's something that you should be proud of. We fought. There was tears along the way. There was frustrations. But we made it. You guys set a goal and you accomplished it. That's something to be extremely proud of. Again, no matter how it happened. So that was last year. So this year, you know, my expectations kind of doubled, maybe tripled. Sitting in quarantine for 5 months, you know, thinking about, in my mind, we shouldn't even lost to Anaheim. You know, I think it just boiled down to just being happy to be at CIF. We made it instead of competing to get that last or that win. So I sat, you know, for quarantine and for 5 months thinking about that last game, you know, whether my girls did or not. Yeah, right? That's crazy. For 5 months, I'm just – it ate me up thinking about all the things that I let slide as a coach, you know, those little things where, you know, as a coach, you have to decide, do I need to put them on the line for this or do I let that one go, you know, and those type of situations where I feel like, you know, they bit us in the butt in the end. And I take that personal. You know, that's me not holding you guys accountable in every way possible to ensure that we get past our goals, really. So again, like I said, that ate me up the whole quarantine. I was thinking about it, finding ways to make us better. How can we get better? You know, what do I need to change as a coach, you know, with my coaching staff and things like that. So for this year, I got high expectations for us. You know, we were blessed with a couple transfers to come in, and you know, I'm excited with what we're going to be able to do. I have two girls coming off ACLs coming back that look way stronger than before their ACL surgery. So that's exciting as well, too. But I got high expectations for these girls. And I feel like we have a lot more IQ that's going to help us out a lot. They know what I'm expecting now this year, so there's no learning curve in that aspect of we know, you know what I expect, I know what I'm expecting from you guys. All we got to do is figure out how to get this done together. And so we've been really focusing on the mental aspect of basketball, just mental toughness, competing. These last couple of days we've been talking about competing versus just working hard, you know. I made them watch the video from Carol Lawson when she was at Duke, and competing versus working hard. You know, if I put somebody on the line and you're running by yourself, are you working or competing as much as if I were to put four of you guys on the line and you guys run next to each other? And so we've really been thinking about, you know, who are you competing with? Are you just competing with the person next to you or the 500 other girls basketball players in Orange County that you may come across? You know, that's your real competition. It's not the person next to you. You're competing against everybody across Orange County who thinks they have a chance at this whole, you know, basketball thing. That's your competition. So we're really focusing on that IQ and that mental side of, you know, just being tougher mentally. I think our skill level, we got all the skill we need, you know, and obviously we'll continue to get better at that. But I think people forget that the mental side of basketball is just as important. So that's something that we'll definitely focus on moving forward.
Well, good. I'm excited to see you guys play. Hopefully come June, which I'm pretty sure when you're or March, right? It's pretty late.
Yeah,
March. Hopefully you're allowed to have fans because I'd love to come check you guys out. All right. So you're the head coach of your program, and I'm sure that you've taken away some nuggets from mentors that you've had or even previous coaches. So if you have, what are some of the nuggets that you've taken away?
Oof, that's a lot between, you know, coaches that have coached me or, you know, coaches I've coached with. I feel like every situation you find yourself in, you can learn something. You know, every coach, whether it's good or bad, you can learn something. You learn what you like, you learn what you don't like. For me, that's a long list. My first ever coach, like ever, I was 4 years old, Coach Byron, Uncle Byron. he coached me. I was the only girl on the team. It was a team full of me and his nephews and just kids around the community. And he took me in, and we were a family. Like, even to this day, you know, those are my brothers. And I think that is huge when it comes to basketball, especially as you get older, is you meet, or us being a family means you got to trust in one another. And so that's definitely what he taught me, is this is your family. You know, they're supposed to always have your back no matter what. So I definitely apply that in everything I use. Is you may not like each other off the court and in real life socially, but when we step on this court and we're together, this is your sister. You guys got to protect each other. You got to look out for each other. You know, nobody gets to mess with your sister besides you, right? So that's how you got to apply it. So that was the biggest thing I took from him. Who else? My AAU coach in high school, Coach Tim. That man, I love that man to death. he used to cuss us out like no other in public, everybody, like, yeah, he would turn heads. He used to cuss us out so bad. But, you know, number one, he did it because he knew how great we could be and how great we were. And number two, even if he cussed us out, you know, our parents are sitting right there. Everybody knew as soon as we walked off that court, you know, he was going to love us up, and nothing changed. You know, it's not personal. It's just basketball. But as soon as we walked off that court, you know, he was loving on us, hugging us, and, you know, taking care of us. And again, that's something that is very big with me, is that whole family aspect. Is, again, you may not get along on the court, or we may have our frustrations, but even when it comes to me as your coach and you being a player, I can be frustrated with you, but as soon as we walk off the court, you give me about 5 minutes to cool down, I'm gonna love you just the same. You know, we're gonna figure this out together. It doesn't, you know, it's on to the next. And so that was something that I definitely took from him, is just, you can yell at your players all you want to, but they have to understand that once we walk off this court, nothing changes. I still love you. I still take care of you. I still make sure you're good. So, you know, there's that too. I coached, you know, I even coached in college for a little bit. I coached the boys, high school boys travel team. And I coached out there with Vernon Chipman. And he's out there, even still now, he's doing the groundwork. Is we coach kids that, you know, came from government housing, who didn't have anything, literally, you know, and pretty much ended up adopting these kids and taking care of them and taking them to tournaments and feeding them and making sure they're good. And again, it just goes back to show you that it's bigger than basketball too. Is basketball what all those boys had, and all they wanted was just somebody to care for them and love them and, you know, be there for them and support them. And so I learned that from Chipman too, is sometimes it's not even about the game, is they just need a hug, you know, or somebody that will answer the phone when they call and they need something. And like I said, he's still out in Florida, you know, doing that groundwork. Is, you know, he has his own little service where he gets donations and takes them back to the communities where those boys used to live to make sure they got clothes and shoes and stuff like that. So that community outreach part of basketball that we kind of forget sometimes is extremely important. Is, like I said, it's bigger than basketball. Sometimes basketball is all these kids have. You know, they don't know anything else. They don't have anything else. So sometimes it's our job as coaches, you know, to put that coach's hat off and put on the mentor hat and just, you know, help them, guide them. So that's definitely what I learned from Chipman. And then obviously Coach Sue at FSU, you know, I there's not enough words to say to Coach Sue, but she's just an amazing woman. One thing that, you know, really actually made me choose Florida State is the fact that she was extremely clear in that we are people first. You know, I think if you ask a lot of people or a lot of players who went to Florida State and why they chose Florida State, is because it was a family. You know, Coach Sue, again, like I said, made it clear that we are people first. You're people first, your student second, and your athlete last. And that's how, you know, that's how she approached us, is making sure our outside lives were okay. She was invested in me personally, my outside life. I know for a fact that there were times where she would be on the phone with my mother, making sure that everything, you know, we're in Florida, my mom's back in California, she's making sure everything in California is okay, you know, knowing that I'm stressing out about my mom. So she's stepping in, helping me out like that. And so, wow. Yeah, like, people don't realize Coach Shu, she does more. I could truly say, you know, just compared to some of my friends that went elsewhere, Coach Sue, she's different. And I love her forever for that. It's just, she cared about us as people, you know, as humans first. And then, you know, basketball is always going to be there. You know, she's going to get you better. She's going to hold you accountable in that sense. But the fact that she actually cared about me, you know, my family, that was huge. And, you know, another thing she was big on was inspiring. So we did a lot of community outreach when I was at Florida State, a lot of community service. And, you know, when you're there as an athlete, as a player, you know, you got to wake up for, you know, community service on a Saturday at 7 a.m. Like, nobody wants to do that. But every time, every time we get there, especially the ones with, like, you know, we're helping kids or the elderly, you know, you get there and you just feel how much they appreciate you being there and how happy they are just to see that Florida State women's basketball is here, you know, helping us, showing support. And again, as a player, you don't really recognize that, but now being outside of that world and being a coach and, you know, doing the little bit of community outreach that I do, I'm thankful that she made us do that, because, you know, one of the greatest things you could do in this world is inspire somebody, you know, inspire mm-hmm. somebody to be better, inspire somebody to, you know, fight for their dreams. You know, there's all type of ways you can inspire somebody. So I think she definitely helped me understand that, again, and their basketball is just a vessel in how you can help people. You know, it's just a very, very small piece in what you can do. And I think, again, Coach Sue definitely instilled that in just community, is serve others. You know, what we do on the basketball court is inspire. You're serving other people. You know, they're looking mm-hmm. to you. So that's definitely something that I take, you know, even now coaching my girls and stuff, you know, is there are always people watching you. You never know. You know, we have a lot of middle schools around here, a lot of middle schools that feed into Beckman specifically. And those girls, you know, on those middle school teams, they're watching you. And if they're not watching you actively now, they watched you last year when you were the eighth grader on campus, you know, and it's mm-hmm. it's inspiring. It's inspiring. Is they saw you as that eighth grader. Now you're on Beckman's high school team. They want to be there. So regardless whether you realize it or not, is somebody's always watching you. You can always be an inspiration to somebody, whether you know it or not. So that's just a couple of the things that I've taken away, is, you know, mainly it really comes down to basketball is just a small piece. It's mm-hmm. we're family. We can inspire people. You know, we can reach out to the community. And really, at the end of the day, you can change world. You can change world. You can change lives just through, again, the basketball being this vessel that we can use. So.
Absolutely. Okay, so on another serious note, because that was kind of serious, lighthearted, but serious. So you're the head coach of a high school program in Irvine, and, you know, I don't know how familiar everyone is who's going to hear this is with Irvine, but I grew up in Irvine. I went to Woodbridge. I actually watched you guys play Woodbridge, you know, a part of recruiting, but also wanted to see how my high school team was doing. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, Irvine is the bubble, right? A lot of kids in Irvine, they're sheltered. They don't know what's going on in the real world. Sorry, but it's true. So if you're a kid from Irvine and you're listening, it's true. I want to know, as a coach who did not grow up in a bubble, you know, you're from Long Beach. I'm going to assume that you've seen some things that kids in Irvine don't see. And you're a mature adult. You're aware with what's going on in the world. Do you address issues that are going on in the world with your team? Like, for example, the Black Lives Matter movement. And if you do, what's your approach? And specifically with these kids, again, that are from Irvine.
You know, honestly, I have not. I want to, and I will. I know I will. That's definitely one thing I pride myself on, is we do a lot of just conversation. We talk about life, the world, and stuff like that. But the reason I haven't is I just honestly been in awe of my girls. You know, I've been blessed with some amazing girls, like truly. They are from Irvine and they are weird. And if they hear this, I call them weird to their face. So it's cool, but, they're aware and they know what's going on. And I've been in awe at just watching them, being able to step back and watch them use their voice. And they have, and I've been proud to just see it, you know, witness it. Like you said, I grew up in Long Beach, so a lot of the things that are coming to the forefront now is stuff that I grew up seeing and hearing about, you know. And absolutely, Irvine is a bubble, but again, like I said, my girls, they've been the voice, you know, on their social media platforms, going to protests and things like that. And I've truly been proud, you know, to be their coach without me even having to say anything to them, you know. That was mm-hmm. all them. They made that decision. They decided to speak up for injustice and, you know, go march for, you know, just equality. You know, that's all we're asking for, is just to be equal and seen as equal and things like that. And I could go on about this kind of stuff all day. It sits deep with me, but Irvine is different. And like you said, I don't know how many people understand Irvine, but you know, it's the OC. It's a bubble. They live in this world where everything just seems perfect. And I guess now that these things are coming to light, it's honestly, for me personally, is a tad bit scary. I'm not gonna lie. I'm one of few Black people that you may see out here in Irvine area, especially where we are. And I have to be conscious of what I do and how I move and things like that. And I think finally my girls are kind of understanding that. And like I said, we will have a conversation, but I've just been proud to watch it and sit back and watch. I can't speak on just me being a Black woman in Orange County. If you guys, people listening to this, just be conscious of what's going on. Like most people, if you're not Black, you don't know what it feels like to walk in a room and be the only Black person in there. Mm-hmm. And all eyes are on you. Like most people don't understand that, you know, and that's what I grew up with. For me, again, I just give a quick example. I just bought a brand new car. You know, thank God I've worked extremely hard to be where I am. You know, I've come from Long Beach, California. I've been to Florida, Georgia. I'm all the way back, and I busted my butt to be able to live in Orange County, California. Like, mm-hmm. to me, where I come from, that's not a small thing. You know, I've worked extremely hard to be where I am today. And I just bought this brand new car to celebrate myself. And then the reality hits is, it's a brand new car. And I'm a Black woman in Orange County. And I'm not the average Black woman. I stand at about 6 foot, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm tall, I'm big. You know, I know what my appearance, you know, what my appearance is and how it comes off. I understand that. I'm fully aware of it. I have to be, you know. But what if I get pulled over because a cop thinks that, you know, it's suspicious for me to be driving this new car, you know, just because of my skin color. Mm-hmm. And then I get pulled over and the situation escalates, not because I do anything, but again, because of my skin color, it's a threat. Mm-hmm. Like that's scary. That's mm-hmm. very scary. And the reality, you know, my girls that play for me, they have to think about that kind of stuff. You know, my mom, she has to think about that kind of stuff. Is, you know, you get a child who works hard to get to a certain place in life, and it can all be taken away just because somebody thinks I don't deserve it because of my skin color. And, you know, I just challenge people, just think about that. And you see the anti-protests of the All Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter and, you know, all that stuff. You know, and I get it, and I'm a firm believer that everybody has a right to have their opinion. You know, absolutely. I'm not taking that away from anybody. But to address Blue Lives Matter, you know, cops choose to be cops. Police officers choose that job. I didn't choose to be Black. I didn't, you know, get to pick out that before I was born, you know, but you chose to be a cop. You chose to put on that uniform and protect people. You don't get to pick and choose who you protect based off how threatened you feel off of my skin color. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, it's not fair. And then secondly, to the All Lives Matter, it's plain and simple. If all lives matter, why are you not upset that Black people are being killed at an extremely disproportionate rate than all other races? It's not that it doesn't happen to white people, because it does. That happens to all races. But Black is at an extreme disproportionate rate. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy. And to top it off, we only see what we catch on film. like I said, I grew up with seeing this stuff and hearing about this stuff. You know, people are in shock just because people are catching it on film now. Imagine if we didn't have cell phones. Mm-hmm. Cops are turning off body cams, so it doesn't seem like those are working either. So it's just like all these things, and most people get to go about their day without having to think about it. Where, me living in Orange County, I have to think about these things everywhere I go. I have to be cautious of what I'm doing everywhere I go. And it's tiring. It's tiring. And I think that's what it's come to now, is the world, the Black community is tired. And then we get the looting and the robbing. And again, I understand all that's wrong, but every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So you've been out here, you know, trace it back all the way back. You taken slaves from Africa, the Middle Passage, you brought us here. We built this land, bare hands. We're treated like we're not people, like we're not human for years and years at a time. Mm-hmm. We have our civil rights. We make it through all of that. We push through all of that. And in 2020, we are still being killed because we are seen as a threat because of our skin color. After you dragged us here, we built this country. We helped build this country with our old bare hands. And again, we weren't even seen as people. We were property. Property. We didn't get equal rights after the civil rights. When was the civil rights? My grandmother was alive in the civil rights, so it wasn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. And again, people just forget that all we've been through as a Black community, and we still have to be cautious of what we do. We haven't earned any right to just walk around here and be equal. Since when is that fair? How is that fair? So that's just my two cents on it. Like I said, I could go on and on about it because it really sits deeply with me. And I think it does sit deeply with me because, again, I've been through it. I worked my way up to earn my right to be in Orange County. I live in Orange County. I'm in this community wholeheartedly. But it's also very scary for me because I'm one of the few Black people. I'm seen as a threat just because of my skin color. And again, I stand at 6 foot tall, so I'm not the average. So as soon as somebody feels threatened by me, and again, I may have not have done anything. I may not even be aware that I made you feel threatened. But that could really end my life, is the ultimate result. And people don't really understand that. And that's the reality of it. That is just the point blank reality of it. And I hope that, you know, I could be a part of the change. I plan to be a part of the change. You know, I hope my girls can continue to be a part of the change. Like I said, I'm extremely proud of them to even step up with such a quickness and want to be a part of the change, you know, is just amazing to me. But I hope people really get on board and understand that this is a real problem. It's not like we're out here. We don't want more than the average. We just want to be considered equal and truly equal and just be, you know, I should be able to walk down the street and not fear for my life. Mm-hmm. And not, again, because I did something wrong, but just because I'm Black in Orange County. I walk to work. I live 5 minutes away from my job. I walk to work. If I walk in a neighborhood and somebody sees me and feels that I don't belong, that could be it for me. When I've, again, truly worked to be where I am. So I just don't wait until your friend is the next hashtag. Don't wait. Don't wait till it personally affects you. Because, again, it's too late. It's too late. It's got to start now. It should have started yesterday if it hasn't started for you. Mm-hmm. We got to make a change. So that's my little two cents on it.
Well, I completely agree. And I'm glad to hear and proud of your girls also that without any guidance really from you as far as this conversation goes, they've just been advocating. And I think that's huge, you know, and I'm especially glad to hear that coming from Irvine. Like I said, I'm from there. I don't know if that's something that would have happened when I was there, but at the same time, you know, with the evolution of social media and things like that, that does help as far as knowing where protests are and just spreading the word and things like that. I think it's like you said with these all lives matter and blue lives matter advocates, they, if they're not personally affected by it, for most people, then they just don't care. And that's terrible. It really, I mean, I'll never understand how you feel. I'm just going to be empathetic and compassionate and listen and just be an ally, be a voice with you or next to you, behind you, whatever the case may be. But I think people just don't get it, you know, if they aren't Black, they don't get it, like you were saying. And I mean, I really don't, but that doesn't mean that I don't care, you know. And there's a lot of people that do. And I hope that we just all can do our part to just make change happen for finally, you know. I mean, it's crazy. Like, this isn't just an issue that's stirred about during quarantine when George Floyd was murdered. This has been going on for years, long before me, long before you. It's just, I don't even know what to say. I just listen. But you know, we'll end it there. I think that's a good note to end it on. I thank you so much for coming on. I thank you for being vulnerable and sharing. I think people need to hear this. So I appreciate it, Coach.
Definitely. I appreciate you having me on here. I'm truly honored. Thank